Hey guys, it's so great you are back. And this week is when we are talking to Andrew, our school counselor, to get his advice on trauma-informed care. How can we really be showing that trauma-informed care in the classroom? So Andrew is going to go over, what does that look like? Connectedness, empathy, self-care, watching for signs of change in behavior. So listen in, you're not going to want to miss a thing. But before we get started, I want to encourage you, if you have not signed up yet, for the Transform Your Student Behavior Workshop. Because can you imagine if your students knew what to do when they knew their behavior was starting to get out of control, or they began to get frustrated, irritated? What can they do without having to ask you every single time? So this is a reminder, what are our strategies really trying to do? We're really trying to transform, improve your student behavior so that they are ready to learn and ready to be engaged in your class. So check out the link in the show notes and sign up today. Welcome to Behavior Strategies for Class. I am Diane Bachman, your behavior paraprofessional with over 15 years of experience working in special education. And I'm so glad you're here because I'll be teaching you about social-emotional learning, behavior strategies, trauma-informed care, and more. So if you are tired of being frustrated and not knowing what to do with your students who have challenging and disruptive behavior, you're in the right place. Now, if you're ready to become more equipped to help your students learn and grow, let's listen in to today's episode. Hey guys, welcome back. Behavior Strategies for Class. And we again have the awesome Andrew Smith sharing his amazing advice today. And we will be talking about trauma-informed care. So Andrew, I will turn it over to you.
All right. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah.
Getting me back. I'm happy. Yeah. So one of the biggest areas that I think over in the most recent history, anyway, when we're talking about just how schools have evolved, is like recognizing that trauma is happening to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And some of this is that awareness from the ACEs study that happened early mid 90s, which I'll talk about in a sec. But at, like, a 1,000-yard view, right? If we take the general look at it, trauma is basically a life event or an event that happens to somebody and just overwhelms their ability or capacity to cope.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems specific, but it's so general that it could, and so unique to everybody, that's where it can be tough with trauma, is that for some people, they have a large capacity to cope. And there are some people who just, their capacity to cope is not as deep as others. And that includes kids as well. It was interesting because I talked about this with one of my principals, and that, you know, things got physical, and her and I, you know, we talked about how we've been punched in the face before, and
yeah.
You know, why can't somebody shake that off? Why can't some of our staff shake that off? And it was like, well, we've been there. You've gotten the black eye, the bloody nose, bloody lip, whatever, from, you know, sports, from, you know, wrestling around fighting with your brother, sister, whatever, maybe from other conflicts when you're growing up. It's like, that's, so we can work through it because we've been there, but some people don't have those experiences, which is probably a good thing in a lot of ways. But it also means that if it happens, it's such a different experience that their ability to move through it is a rather new experience for them. They don't know kind of how to process it, how to put it in perspective, how to do a lot of these different things, and really just to cope with that situation. And so when you have that overwhelming bit, then it just kind of floods you with anxiety, with different reactions, Biochemical reactions happen quite a bit. And then now we have a traumatic situation. And it goes even to the point of how your memories are encoded. So even to the level of cellular DNA, where certain traumas can change how your DNA is expressed. That's one of the foundations of the epigenetic movement of how trauma and different things can alter you at a very cellular level. Like poverty can alter how your genes are expressed. And that's where we start. Yeah, it's crazy about how we'll see just different cancers, different health issues start boiling up, and it seems like all of a sudden it just kind of exploded out of, on one set of like family where it wasn't there before. It also has a huge effect on mental health, obviously. So the ACEs study is kind of the biggest homework and biggest way that people have started to integrate trauma into just all sorts of different things. And this was a study that was done by Kaiser Permanente, like I said, in the 90s. And what they did is they started noticing that, and it was really kind of weird about how they did that. They started doing a health survey because they were noticing that a lot of people in certain situations had a lot of health effects, like started having some prediabetes, high blood pressure, and things like that, certain rates of cancer. And it was just how that somebody misphrased a question on this questionnaire that they came up with. And it was something to the effect of how, when instead of saying, have you ever been sexually abused, it was when, how old were you when you were sexually abused, or something along those lines. And so just that turn of phrase opened up the floodgates for people to be able to kind of start divulging these different experiences that they had that were just huge life impacts. And from there, they started noticing that the more experiences of abuse, neglect, things like that, poverty, experiences with mental health at a younger age correlated with these huge health impacts later on in life. So they came up with the original health study with the ACEs, and it was about 10 questions. And the areas they covered were just kind of all over the place, but they, to try and get like an encompassing, a holistic view of it, they related to abuse, household challenges, and neglect. So, was there emotional, physical, or sexual abuse in your house, or that you experienced as you were growing up? Was one of your parents treated violently that you witnessed? Because maybe you weren't the direct recipient, but yeah, we know a lot of influence come from outside of what we witness, not necessarily being the direct recipient of it, right? Toxic stress is a lot of times created by atmospheres in the house or wherever you're at. Was there substance abuse or mental health? Are your parents separated or divorced? Did you have somebody who was in jail, right? Incarcerated? And was there emotional and physical neglect? And those were kind of those 10 waves. Now, here's where a lot of people don't realize is that this was done in San Diego, which is predominantly white, educated, not middle-aged, but kind of on the younger spectrum from like 20 to 50, I think it was. And they had about 17,000 people. And so they started from there seeing that all of these correlations were happening between people who experienced some very vivid trauma and health impacts later on. And so it's been refined since there, and the current statistics are about what, depending on where you look and kind of what the lens is, because there's been another evolution of the question. So there's about another 10 or so, I think, that have been added onto like the newer ACE study and things like that. But it's 1 in 5 will experience, 1 in 5 people, not just kids, not just adults, 1 in 5 people overall will experience a mental health or a mental health experience during their lifetime. So not even neglect, abuse, or anything like that. 20% of us will have some sort of mental health experience in our lifetime. That's a fairly large impact, right? In our classrooms, we know that that's true. It's either 1 in 4 or 1 in 5. So in a 25 person classroom, anywhere from 5 to 7 of us, 7 of the kids, I mean,
Right.
are going to have some sort of ACE, neglect, abuse, mental health experience, or so in their family, right? So that is huge. And being able to then look at our kids and say, okay, so why can't Johnny just get his facts going, his math facts? I mean, what's so hard about that? Well, what we don't realize is that Johnny's the one responsible at second grade for getting himself up and getting ready for school because there's nobody else there, right? I've had kids as young as kindergarten who are the ones that are really trying to get themselves going. Maybe there's an older brother or sister who are supposed to help them or walk them. And so what you're talking about are just some very big systemic things. One of the criticisms of the ACEs study and about some of the statistics are like the studies have underrepresented minority and poverty populations. So there's a chance that we're even higher than that, than 20% or so,
It's
or
wild.
20%. Yeah. And we see that with free and reduced ways. That's another way that schools very commonly measure that of like, what's the economic impact on people? To the point where like there are some schools where it's like we're just going to serve breakfast because we don't know if our kids are getting it, so we're just going to make sure that they get something. They're going to get 2 squares a day while they're with us that they can count on, and we'll send some snacks home. So when we start saying trauma informed, we got to have some awareness of how prevalent it is, right? And just how widespread all of this, not just the prevalence of like where it's being exhibited, where it's coming out as, but how often, how common is this? And that's hard to know, but we also have we have this at least basis to go from some of these studies.
Right. I mean, that's a wealth of information right there. And I think, like you said, just becoming trauma informed, I think is also as trauma awareness, and to realize that some of your students who have had trauma or they're still going through trauma. I know one of the other ones that some of our kids, a parent is dying from cancer. We've had some students deal with that, or homelessness. All of these things affect your student and how they behave in your classroom, and are they engaging? And you can only imagine, I can't even imagine just being in class, not knowing, like, where are we sleeping tonight? Am I gonna get dinner tonight? Do we have to go back to the shelter? Or is mom gonna die tonight? But by the way, it's time to do your math and focus on your math test. It's so hard. So what are some things that teachers, educators can do to help support these students?
Good question. You just reminded me of the poem "I Ain't Got a Pencil," or "'Cause I Ain't Got a Pencil." That just kind of, if you guys are listening and you want to look that up, that's a great poem. I'm actually going to try and throw that into a training here on Monday for my staff.
Awesome.
So check that out when you get a side note when you get a chance on the
What is that
side.
one called again?
"'Cause I Ain't Got a Pencil."
Oh, okay.
It's a good one. So the awareness is one of the biggest parts. I'm gonna harp every time you have me on here, and I'm gonna harp on this is connection, connection. Know your kids, know their stories, okay?
Exactly.
But when you're trauma informed, then you can start being trauma responsive, right? And so I always like to describe it as one's an adjective and one's a verb, right? We need the awareness to start having the action. You can't have the action without the awareness. So some of the bar general PBIS, when you talk about RTI or MTSS, that base universal level is know your kids, connect as much as you can with them. Okay. And then you can start being specific. So I'm going to speak for myself growing up with divorced parents until my mom was able to remarry when I was about 8 or 9. The topic of having a father was a huge trigger for me,
Mm.
where it was a very normal thing. I mean, we're talking about late 80s, early 90s. So the awareness wasn't always there of like, oh, hey, get your moms and dads, you go to scouts, things like that. Have mom, dad, this is a dad son thing, like I ain't got one, right? So when we talk about having like muffins with moms and dates with dad and things like that, just we need to know, we need to know our population to know if that's something that's going to be great
Appropriate.
or if that's going to have some different things, because chances are at every school you go to, there's going to be at least a few that are going to feel a little wonky or I don't know, uncomfortable about just some of those things just because of their own experiences. So some of it is being aware of the language we use. Okay. Knowing that with ACEs, if we have one ACE, there's 75% more likely to have another ACE. Okay. One makes you more likely to have another, right? If you have an experience with a mental health, with one of your family members having some mental health in the family, chances are that, that puts a huge strain on relationships and marriages. So you might be more likely to come from a divorced or a split household, right? With a different integrating different parts into your household like that, with step parents, boyfriends, things like that. And that's one of the foundational ACEs that they looked at. So there's some different things from there. So take a step back, know your kids. But when we start seeing trauma creep in and things like that, know that it's not about you. We have reactions to trauma as survival mechanisms, right? This is what gets me to from point A to point B. And I know that if I do this, I will survive. Okay. Sometimes that's not the best thing for school area, right? I always use the bear example of like, if I'm used to being around bears, I gotta know that I'm gonna either fight or flight, right? I'm gonna either post up or I'm going to run away. And so when math becomes that bear or sense, which scent is one of the biggest your memory, somebody comes in and that bear is dad or dad's clone reminds him of the bear, then we gotta know that it's not about us, but it's about what they're going through. So as educators and as people who work with many humans, we need to know that sometimes it's not about us. The focus isn't about us, it's about them. Okay. And that can be hard to take ourselves out of it because it feels so much sometimes like it's a personal attack. I was speaking with a staff member the other day, like why this person doesn't want to work with me. This kiddo doesn't want to connect with me. They don't want to do anything with me. Like, well, it's not about you. You're a new person and you're replacing a different person. It's more about where that student is, and they have some other factors going on besides just the fact that they've got a new person in. But we got to work slow. Slow is smooth and smooth is fast. So getting to know it, be a trusted, consistent person. So keep yourself consistent. If you feel like you're going from your upstairs brain to your downstairs brain, right? If they're triggering you. And in counseling, we call that parallel processing. We call that transference, all those different, $5 words. Basically, it means that what they're going through sometimes triggers us, and what their behavior does sometimes triggers us. We need to be able to tap out, tag out, however you call it. I really loved my last building. I still love my current building is amazing, but we used to have a penguin was our code word. And so if somebody felt overwhelmed, you would hear somebody call penguin. And the funny part was that I didn't know exactly what that meant when I started. So I was walking by and somebody was yelling penguin down the hall. And I was like, whoa, I had no idea. I thought I was like, did anybody else hear that voice? But have a way to tag out with somebody because sometimes the behaviors are going to be intense. Sometimes they're going to feel super personal, even though they're not, and they're going to trigger some things in us. So for our own self-care, and if we have our own traumas, we need to be able to tag out because the idea is that we're the adult. We need to regulate so that we can co-regulate because that's going to be the first thing that we need to do in order to reach a kid, in order to teach, reteach, whatever, we have to regulate first. So having some self-care and a boundary setting and an ability to tag out with some great friends. I happen to work with a couple of people who are great at tagging out. I think you might know her. Her name's Diane. And you and our friend Rita were able to tag me out a few times,
Yeah.
just for different things when we've worked. So having that relationship and that connection with your coworkers and the people you work with, the people you're around, that's so key too, because it's going to happen on those gray February days where you got like
Exactly.
only an inch of snow, not enough to close. And your friends who are that need it the most are never sick or never gone, but they're trying
Yeah.
you. And your patience
So
just
true.
it ain't there. And they had a rough night and they're going to make it rough for everybody else because that's what feels normal for them. So remember that some people's normal is not what we typically think, right? And the chances are that there's three other people that are feeling that too in that classroom. And that's affected as well. So knowing that they can affect us and they're hurting, it's not about them, or it's not about us, it's about them. Sorry.
Yeah.
So those are just so many different things that you can do right there. And that's even before we start teaching or reteaching any behaviors. That awareness to create that response. I always talk about empathy as well, because and it's all kind of mingled and like interwoven. But empathy starts with respect. You don't give somebody respect unless you know them. But once you know them, you're more likely to give them respect, more likely to give empathy after that. So being able to kind of use all of those different tools from an SEL sense, an emotional IQ sense, that helps you start just connecting more, being effective too, but also keeping yourself safe, right? You can lose yourself in somebody else's problems and somebody else's trauma, and it doesn't feel good at that point. And if you're burning yourself out that way, you're not going to be effective for all the other many humans that you're working with and your staff that you're there with too.
Yeah, I think that's totally huge. Is not taking it personally. And that relationship and connection takes time. Like that reminds me of one of our third grade students who, I mean, he, excuse me, just lost it in one of the third grade classrooms, and he just trashed that whole room. And I can remember after he left, we went back in, of course, to help clean up. And other teachers and educator were like, "Well, I can't believe he did this. I can't believe he did this. What's wrong with it?" I'm like, "Whoa, whoa. You need to think about like what happened to that student to make him react like this." It's so easy to just be like, "Well, something's wrong with Johnny, and that's just the way he is. Like, why bother?" Or I've heard that, "Well, I've tried to connect, but we're just not connecting." And it's like, well, how many times have you tried to connect, or maybe had lunch with that student, or just like behavior strategies, you can't just do one and be like, "Well, that didn't work." You tried it once, it's the same thing. Like, you have to be consistent. Showing up, showing them that you care. And granted, connections happen all throughout the day. They don't necessarily have to be, you spend an hour with Johnny at lunch. Now I've connected. It's all day. It's that, encouragement. It's that smile. It's the way you greet them in the morning. Like, we just can't reiterate this enough, I think, like you said, it comes back to connection, it comes back to relationship and building that for them. Because for a lot of students, or for some, you are their second home. You are maybe even their first home, their first family, when they come to school. You are their safe place. And so being able to greet them, encourage them, And then, then you go into the academics, like, okay, well, you notice they're struggling here. Then you put in those interventions, with reading, with writing, all of those things. And again, I know educate, we're not therapists. I get that. And I know some teach, that's not my job. That's not my job. Right now, it kind of is. Because these students are in your classroom and they're hurting, and they're not going to get any of your academics that you're teaching until you take those moments to, again, let them be seen, heard, and valued while they're in your classroom. So my next question, would be, what would be a couple signs that students may have for teachers to be like, oh, to kind of get your antenna up. Now you kind of have some ideas of what trauma is. And now you're seeing a couple students display different behaviors. So, what would be a couple signs of students who maybe have had traumatic or maybe are going through traumatic events?
Yeah, no, great question. And as everything with a kid, it's going to be a maybe, right? And the way I said, the reason why I said that is because with kids, sometimes there's only one way it's coming out, but there can be many different ways it comes up. And what the classic example is when you have somebody who has what a lot of people would call ADHD-like behavior. They're hyperactive. They're kind of going from friend to friend to friend. They're always blurting. They're showing impulsivity. They're always looking around the room. They can't seem to concentrate. So, one of the biggest things is the hyper awareness that comes from trauma, especially with when we have abuse cases, because these kids are amazing. They are the kids that have the BS meter. Of it's
So
top notch
true.
because they know how to read people because that's their survival mechanism. So they know that they get the whiff of, I don't know, cologne, cigar smoke, they use, anything like that. And they know that they're in the environment where they've got to be survival based. They're not working with their wizard brain. They've retreated back. And that isn't always something that has an apparent trigger or an apparent outward sign, but what they'll start doing is they'll start being able to like start reading and not being able to focus on any content because that's not what's going to keep them safe. So that hyper awareness is sometimes can look like that ADHD like symptoms of not being able to focus, going all over the place, talking, impulsivity. A lot of people think that it's just that shy, withdrawn, and that can be some signs, absolutely, if you see a large change in affect, really. So what that can be, that gray part of me saying that is maybe you had a kiddo who was a fairly outgoing kid, and all of a sudden they've had this huge change and they're not outgoing anymore. They're not seeking their friends out. Sometimes it's changes in sleep. With kids, sleep factors are one of the biggest parts and diet factors, right? Because they can't control so many things in their life. They're going to exert control over certain things. And generally what we say is what comes in and what goes out. Okay. So with food factors controlling, you'll see some different changes with how much they eat or what they eat or whether they eat or not. And then if there's any bathrooming issues, things like that, that can happen. And it doesn't have to be little kids. There be kids that are older than that. One of the treatments, sometimes for encopresis, where it works with stool and different things like that, is going to therapy because of possible traumatic experiences and triggers, right? That's also with IBS for some people as well when we get older, that's some cognitive behavioral therapy paired with some dietary nutrition and other medications is one of the treatments for IBS for some people. And it can be related to past traumatic experiences because that has such an effect on our gut health. not only just the control that some people will exert over it, but also just the gut health that we have. So much anxiety and stress kills our gut biome, and then you're gonna be stuck with some different things that are gonna happen, either vomiting, diarrhea, things like that. So if you see any of those things, that can be a sign. Stealing can be a sign, right? They're exerting control over what they want in their environment in any way they can. People used to talk about poverty mentality and things like that, but one of the biggest things about control issues and things like that, to use another phrase for it, is I want these in my life. This is a way for me to get these things, and my value is related to the things that I have, not who I am, because that's not valued, but what I have to offer. And so you'll start seeing some different things about latching on to different items, always having items, bringing items in. So those are a few different signs of that. Obviously, if there's any big triggers of like sounds and sensitivities to words or phrases, smells, sensitivities to sudden movements, we had a kiddo who worked with him and the brother in a treatment center's situation, and anytime there was anything that happened kind of in that somewhat periphery of his vision, there'd be a huge instinctual reaction to cover. We've had others where some nonverbal friends I've worked with, if there's any sort of loud whining noises or loud yelling because of some sibling interactions that were not healthy, we would see an increase in behaviors that way. And since they were nonverbal, we couldn't get any sort of pre-warning other than we would start seeing amplified behavior. There's a lot of anxiety that came out as running around, climbing things, because if I can run away from it, if I can climb things, then I can get away. So, but I would say, if you wanted a general rule, has there been a large change in behavior? Has it gone kind of flipped 180, or like, Susie's just feeling a little off today. I wonder what's going on. And the last 3 days they've been kind of off and on and roller coastery or anything like that. Absences are a big deal too. That's one of the reasons why we track absences so much, is some kids, they said they're responsible for getting there, whether they're in high school or even down to like kindergarten or first grade. Sometimes they're responsible for getting up and getting them to school themselves, and hopefully they're wearing clean stuff and have some food with them. So there's just so many factors. And just to kind of reach out to your point, it shouldn't be our jobs, right? But that's kind of how it's landed. Going through my doctorate program and some of the research I've been looking at is people's experience with mental health, not just any sort of experience. And the number one factor is the only time people can get exposed for some is through the school system. That's their one and only sometimes exposure to any sort of mental health is through the school system. And it's just not enough. It's not what we're supposed to be there for, but we can either expect people to move to where we are, which sometimes doesn't really work, in my experience, personally speaking, or we can meet where they're at. And your kids are showing up every day. Sometimes it's on me to meet them where they're at. It really is. Because if they could meet me where I was at, people would usually do that long ago. That wouldn't be the problem if it wasn't a problem, right? So that's
Yeah,
what I
then
like
you'd be out of a job.
to do. That'd probably be a good thing. That'd be out of job, right? So just any sort of drastic change in behavior and those kind of areas that we just talked about are some different ways to kind of keep your spidey sense going if you're just not getting a good feeling. And most teachers I work with have a great spidey sense. They may not be able to kind of like tweeze it out right at the moment, but they know.
Yeah, I agree. And the change in behavior, like that's for real. I worked with fourth grade class, and it was exactly that. He was like the class clown. He was always interacting with everyone, talking with everyone. And one day when I was in there, like he is just so quiet. He's sullen, he's like sunken in his chair. And I'm like, what is going on? And so I actually called him outside and I was like, what's happening? And I mean, he actually talked about hurting himself. And I was like, all right, this is not good. And so I went and talked to the amazing Carrie Manzo. And she's like, yeah, she's like, if you can, just dig a little bit deeper and we'll see where we go from there. And thankfully, I had already kind of built that relationship with him. So I wasn't, and not that I spent a ton of time with him, but he knew who I was. He knew I, cared about him. And so he was able to share that his parents were going through a divorce. He wasn't sure, who he was going to be with. And so then, of course, Manzo came in and they actually called parents and were able to really just let him express himself to his parents, because of course that's hard, when they're going through a divorce and parents are kind of like trying to figure out their own stuff, let alone like, oh yeah, how do you feel? And I mean, I haven't been through a divorce, but I'm assuming, that's just kind of the way it is. Kids kind of get a little neglected. But anyways, thankfully, he was able to talk to his parents and kind of work through that a little bit better. But yeah, I mean, it was like a 360 change of behavior. So that's totally for real. And then one more thing to point on, as far as like we had a fifth grade student who, when he had times that he'd want to talk, he would talk for a while and it's like you just sit and listen and he would just say he doesn't trust anybody. He was in the foster system and then he would name off like all of everybody in our team. Well, I can tell when she's upset and I can tell when she's sad and I can tell this and this and this. And it's like, whoa. Like again, you don't realize like they really are watching us and listening to us. And, I mean, really, it's just reciprocating that back to them, just listening for a few minutes. And if you don't have time at that point, I get it. You could be in the middle of a lesson, but being able to say, you know what, Johnny, we'll connect at recess. Or, if they feel like they need to talk to somebody else. There's another student I've worked with and same thing. Super sweet girl, be happy smiling. And then other days, like her face is just so sad. And sometimes I'm just like, do you need to talk to somebody? And sometimes she'll say yes and other times no. But again, these are students that you just sometimes they're even just students you see passing in the hall, But definitely taking the time, get to know your student and know that it will take time. Again, on another thing is students who've been through trauma and they've had the adults in their life who have totally screwed up to say, they're not going to trust you. They're not going to come running to you right away. Like that takes time to build trust for them to know you are a person of your word. And so again, just be patient, show grace, share a smile. I mean, those things just go so far. So, Mr. Andrew, any last amazing advice that you would like to share with us?
Oh, geez. Be kind and just know it's okay not to be okay for the students and for you. And if anything, take a step back and say, is this if is what I'm saying because they need something, because what's happened to them, right? And if it's a need, is it emotional? Is it physical? Is it relational? Is it need for control? And just know that put your own gas mask or put your own mask, not your own gas mask on, put your own mask on first.
Yeah,
And
that's a whole nother problem.
yeah, that's a horse of a different color right there. And just know that investing is in kids is always a good thing. You're always going to get a return. It may not be right away, but some kids, their problems and the things that have happened to them did not happen right away either. So for us to think that it's going to happen the next day, that'd be a lot for any of us, let alone for many human who things are happening to, not because. So that's so keep yourselves safe and healthy. Know that behavior is communication of some need, and that investing is in kids is always going to be a good thing. And that's all the wisdom I got, I think, and I stole a few of them.
Well, it's awesome and amazing, and how many other A words can I come up with? But we do appreciate you being here again, Andrew, and we look forward to your awesome advice for next month.
I
And
see. Good night.
hopefully, we will have my PIC here, Rita, shout out. And thanks again, Andrew.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to come on here.
Thanks.